Welcome into a Golf Channel podcast. I'm your host, Will Gray. Happy to be joined by Danny Cannell, former college and pro quarterback, current ESPN radio host, and this week a participant in the Diamond Resorts Invitational. Before we dive into your day job, we need to get your vital signs on the golf course. Let's go through this. Give me your handicap.
Right now, I'm a four.
Okay.
More than respectable. I've had it down to scratch,
okay,
but then I had kids. And I feel like there's a formula for every child you have, like it knocks a stroke off your game. So I was probably a one. I have three daughters, so okay, there it goes.
Because most people lose more than one shot, I think, in that translation.
So I'll take it. I'll still take it where it's respectable.
What's your best single round?
69. Okay. And that number, like breaking the 70 barrier, took a really long time. And I did it at my course down in Fort Lauderdale where I was playing a ton, Coral Ridge Country Club.
Oh.
And I only did it once. So I've been around 70 a couple other times.
Well,
and it's still a mind game for me because I'll be at that territory, you know, coming 17, 18, and then I'll have a double or something on 18. So I'm still a little bit of a mental basket case out there.
What's one area of your game you're working on the most right now? You're coming out of a winter in Bristol, Connecticut.
Yeah, so my game is funny because I think the easiest part for me personally to pick up is the driver and the irons. Like just contact, making good contact, I can get it far enough. It's just short game. It's always the feel with the wedges around the green and just putting, just getting a feel for the game because it feels so foreign to you as it is, being it wasn't your primary sport, and it does take a while to get that back. So I'll be spending some time out there just chipping around and hopefully don't pull a TC Chen out there on the course at any time.
Let's get some positive
things going. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Good
call. So you're coming off certainly the busy part of your calendar. How tough is it to kind of try and get a little bit of an outlet and get a few holes under your belt during the fall season when you guys are staying so busy with college football?
Impossible. Like I'm not joking when I say I haven't hit any balls. Because we have our radio show 5 days a week, but there's also some TV responsibilities I have to do with SportsCenter. So that's 5 days a week where I'm pretty just going full time. And then Saturday I'm in studio for 15 hours throughout the college football day. We'll be watching there, doing all the halftime coverage. And I usually get home Saturday night around 3 a.m. after it's all said and done. So Sunday, I'm trying to sleep in, but I have my kids waiting. I don't get to see my kids that much during football, so I usually try to play with them. And the other issue is living in Connecticut. The weather becomes a factor sometimes. So I'm looking at investing in a putting green for the basement.
Okay.
And maybe putting up a net in there because my 9-year-old likes to play a little bit of golf, so I want to get have her be able to.
There you
play.
Go. That'll be good. You can do the combo. You get the kids' time, get them into the
exactly.
game, and you can have a little practice for yourself. That can work out well.
Yeah. So.
All right. So a few days ago, we had the national title game just down the road in Tampa. Am I crazy to think that this game is not as great as Texas USC? I feel like there's so much recency bias going on where people are proclaiming this is the greatest thing ever. I still feel like Texas USC is a cut above this game.
Yeah, that's fair. I wouldn't have any problem with that because I think Texas USC, you had two offenses that both played pretty well and you had two great quarter. You had great players on both sides of the ball. Whereas last night you had a great defense for Alabama facing Clemson. It was a complete team and they had a great quarterback, but Alabama's deficiencies on offense were a reason I would say, you know what, that game wasn't the prettiest to watch from an offensive standpoint. I mean, and a lot of reasons go behind that. A true freshman playing quarterback for Alabama, you know, their offensive coordinator gets fired a week before the game. So there are all these different issues, but I wouldn't have any problem. And even Deshaun Watson, for as great a night as he had statistically, it wasn't pretty early on in that game. I think that's what makes it kind of special is that he was able to overcome that adversity.
You feel like the Kiffin-Sarkisian stuff is overblown at this point?
Yeah, I do. I knew
It's not Kiffin or Sarkisian's fault that they gave up 35 points on defense.
No, not at all. And if you watched Alabama's offense all year long, they looked exactly like that. They just had a little bit more success. But they didn't ask their true freshman quarterback to do a whole lot. And I wouldn't either with that defense that they had on that side of the ball. So I think that explained a lot of it. I knew it was going to be a major storyline. Leading, I was like, oh, I hope we don't blow. But there presents some challenges, but I don't think it was that big of a deal.
Yeah, I would agree. I'll give you that. Yeah. All right, so growing up, where did you pick up the game? You're playing football, you're playing baseball, growing up through high school and college, but where did golf fit into this?
So I grew up in South Florida. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate. I actually grew up on a golf course, Coral Ridge Country Club down in Fort Lauderdale. But when I was 10 years old, I was playing baseball, playing basketball, all the typical sports, soccer, any sport you played, I was playing it. You know, if it had a ball, I'd kick it, throw it, hit it, whatever I could do. And my dad wanted to get me into golf because he thought it would be a game, you know, it's little easier on your body, you know, all these types of things. So he got me a couple lessons, and I actually played in a couple summer tournaments when I was around 10 or 11 years old, and I hated it. Like, you had to tote your own bag in 95-degree weather in South Florida in the summertime, and I wasn't that good yet, and so I hated it. And so my parents were just kind of having me try everything, and so they weren't real like, hey, you're going to have to do golf. I just went back to baseball. Yep. So that was my first exposure, and I kind of kick myself now because I'm like, man, I wish I would have stuck it out and played some more. So I really didn't play that much in high school, and then in college got back into it, where I'd go out, you know, on Sundays, we'd go out to Seminole Golf Course, not Seminole.
Yes.
Florida State Seminole Golf Course, a nice little public track up there. And, you know, we'd grab a case of beer and just go play. But I really got the bug when I got drafted by the New York Giants. My first offseason, I had a bunch of time, you know, it was the first time I had some time off. And I was like, all right, I want to get good. And I played a ton. Probably spent too much time working on my golf game than my quarterback skills, or maybe I would have played a little bit longer for the Giants.
See, this is funny. We had Josh Beckett in a couple days ago, and he said a similar thing. He played with the Marlins. He wasn't doing golf. He was doing fishing, doing other stuff. He didn't get into golf until he went up to Boston in the Northeast, where the season is 7 or 8 months, and that's where the golf bug hits you, I guess. I don't know what it is about that that neck of the woods, but clearly it did for you as well. So who was your guy in terms of, as a golf fan, who was your guy growing up or even in high school, college, that you would pull for in a match?
I always liked Davis Love III for some reason. I don't know. I thought he was smooth. I mean, I love Freddie Couples' swing. Like, I don't play with a glove. I try not to play. It's going to be hard this week because I haven't played. But I try to play without a glove. Like, there's certain things that I would pick up. Like, Davis Love, I loved his swing. I just thought it looked very smooth.
You played growing up, you played in South Florida without a glove?
Well, that was a challenge that I faced. No, when I was little. I've tried to go with that.
That's a great way to lose a five iron.
Ernie Els was a guy I liked to play because I thought his body looked similar to mine, and I would try. And I loved, you know, the Big Easy.
The tempo,
exactly.
So good.
So I would try to model those types of things. But man, when I was at Florida State, I was in Tallahassee, came over, and watched TPC Sawgrass. So I watched that tournament, and that's kind of when I really got the bug because I was starting to look at all these different guys and getting close up looks at them, and just got hooked. And now, you know, being fortunate enough to get to meet some of these guys, then you start pulling for guys because they're great dudes off the course. Like Jim Furyk, I played in his charity golf tournament, and he always has guys at his tournament, and he's a Ohio State Buckeye fan, so he always wants to talk football. So you get to, like, pull for these guys because they're really good dudes.
If I make you PGA Tour commissioner for a day, what's the first thing you're going to change or do or whatever?
I think we have to do something with equipment, because it is getting a little bit out of control how far guys are hitting it. I mean, look, we tried to extend courses for Tiger Woods specifically, and everybody just kind of caught up to him. I think there almost should be something where they should put a limitation on the ball or the club faces, something where there's just, all right, we've gone as far as we can go with the equipment. Let's call it a day on that one and have everybody, you know, playing with the same equipment.
They've talked about that, especially for the Masters, maybe having an Augusta National ball where, because that course is the be-all and end-all that you say you don't want to be messing with it year after year. Maybe everyone steps inside those gates, you can play one ball. But I kind of like that. I'll let you tell Callaway and Titleist that we need to roll back the ball.
But it's like telling Apple they can't come out with a new iPhone.
No more innovation. We're done here. All right. Well, I am, as you know, a Florida Gator, so we need to delve back into a little bit of college football here. What is your favorite road venue to play in, either for good reasons or bad reasons?
All right, I love playing at Florida Field,
but
it wasn't my favorite.
It's fine.
Clemson's up there, Death Valley, but my favorite, and it's kind of sad because you can't do it anymore, is the old Orange Bowl. Playing, and I was awful there. Like, it wasn't like there are great memories. I threw three picks and got benched in that game, but I did play in an actual Orange Bowl versus Notre Dame my last year. It was the last game ever at the Orange Bowl venue at the old one. There was just something about it, the character, the feel, the smell. Like, I mean, it was bad, and the way the stands kind of bounced up and down. But it just had an energy and a character that you don't see. Like, and I'm the same way with the Yankee Stadium. Like, I like the old one better than the new one. I like some things that have character, and it takes a lot of time to get to a place where you have those types of memories.
Got
to
have the on-campus stadium. Miami playing 20 miles down the road.
No, and they have two good games a year, and those ones will be good atmosphere. But they only need 45,000 seat stadium. Yeah. Like, just have that, and then put it on near campus, and they'd be set up.
So, what is now in your current
Florida
radio?
Florida Field was the loudest I ever played in. Just so you know.
That's good.
The loudest.
Did you ever play at LSU?
No, I never got to play there. But that's one I think that would be an all-timer, up there.
I went to the Florida State game in 2003, the PK Sam game, and I hate that you guys won that game because that was my favorite all-time swamp game. It was the loudest it ever was.
Right.
And 4th and 14, we need to digress because I'm just going to start. It was
my favorite. Yeah. I've never heard a crowd get as quiet as 1993 when we won the national championship and we were playing, and Charlie Ward. It was like a third down, and we were losing, and he hit work done.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it was so loud, and then just instantly, you could almost hear a pin drop.
Yeah. So now in your day job as a radio host for Cillo and Cannell, what is the top fan base that just absolutely gets after you?
So the worst, basically, what you're saying.
Yes. Trying to couch it nicely.
It's funny. We've actually had this debate on our show, like top five worst, most obnoxious fan bases. And I'll give you, there is a consensus that's starting to build around our analysts. And especially with Twitter, you get to know them so much better.
It's
so
perfect.
Intimately,
it's the meet and greet of social media.
Personally, for me, and it's always and it shouldn't be an indictment of the fan bases because it's always the worst of their fan bases that are the loudest. I was hard on Alabama the last 4 or 5 years. Like, I've been one to say, hey, they're beatable. Yeah. And saying they're beatable is like saying their program is trash to the Alabama fan base. They have been after me, but Ohio State, across the board, one of the most obnoxious. Michigan fans this year, I said I didn't think they were good enough to be in the playoff, and their fans let me have it. I'll tell you this.
Okay.
I haven't had to endure this wrath, obviously, but FSU
talk about
Twitter.
FSU hashtag FSU Twitter
is up there, and that's why I say it's mostly the worst of the fan base that gets out there, because we have great fans. But sometimes they're not so great on Twitter.
FSU Twitter set a high watermark in 2014. It's going to be hard for anyone to beat, but I do think that Bama and Ohio State.
Gator fans hate me, but they don't have anything to talk smack about.
Sad but true. Yes, yes. We're quietly waiting, just mourning the loss of just our entire quarterback regime for the last 5 or 6 years, but whatever. I will let you get out of here on this one. So you're heading over to Grand Tranquilo. What is one guy you want to beat in this week's field?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, I would love to beat Marty Fish, but he's like a runaway favorite.
You take the defending champion.
Him out. All right, I have one that I want to beat, and I didn't beat last year, and it's not a guy.
Ah.
Blair O'Neill beat me last year, and I was not too happy about that. So that's my goal, is to beat Blair.
All right. Heads up, Blair.
Yes, Cannell, better watch out.
Cannell's coming for you.
Did you get in her kitchen a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Now you got a couple days here still.
All right,
coming off a four-month layoff, what could possibly go wrong here? But Danny Cannell, appreciate you stopping in. Best of luck this week at the Diamond Resorts Invitational, and may Florida State go 11-1 eternally.
There it is.
All right, that's going to do it for this Golf Channel podcast. I'm Will Gray. For Danny Cannell, we'll see you next time.